It's time for the Packet Pushers Podcast,
where too much networking would never be enough.
A podcast on the data networking industry, routing, switching, design, strategies, daily work life, or whatever we find interesting. Are you ready? Welcome to Packet Pushers Unplugged, a podcast on wireless networking where real people discuss events, technology and work life in wireless networking. We gather articles, ideas, and then we're going to get together and flap our chins about them. Get comfortable while we get around the survey kit, use our humour, wit, technical talent, and talk about wireless networking. Speaking of talent, our world-class pool of resources are here again this week to do the business. Jennifer Huber, welcome back to the show. How have you been? What have you been doing?
I've been good. I've been on a roof. I think I say that every time because it's like I've been on roofs quite frequently as of late. I keep finding myself on top of a roof going, how did I get here? Yeah. And I'm glad I brought sunscreen.
Yeah. Well, we did a vendor call this week and you were there as well and you were actually listening into the call. And when you finally piped up to say, yes, I'm here, all you could hear was this wind. It was like in the middle of a cyclone. It was like, no wonder. They were a bit surprised, I think. I don't think they understand what a working engineer really does. And also on the show this week is Andrew von Nagy. Andrew, I hope I got that right. What are you doing? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
I've been working a lot on guest interaction and customer Wi-Fi for use in retail locations. I'm actually the lead wireless engineer for a Fortune 50 retail company here in the U.S. and proud CWNE number 84 recently. So, and I hope to be also CCIE wireless here pretty soon.
Oh, outstanding. There's not many of those around, is there?
Not too many yet. I feel the slack about to be picked up here pretty soon. I think people have been ramping up. The tests have been out there for a while, so we're going to start to see it pick up, I think.
Cool. Yeah, I know, Jennifer, you've had a couple of shots, and you winding up for another one? Or
I have. I am winding up for another one. It's coming up soon. Yeah. I just had to pay for it, so it'll be here before I know it.
I was talking to one guy the other day. He described his one lab attempt, Tom Hollingsworth, in a couple of shows back, and he described it his $1,400 Coke can. Because he got a free can of Coke out of it. But there you go. And also with us today is Sam Clements. Sam, tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi, guys. I'm out of the Nashville area. I'm a wireless engineer for a network consulting company here locally. And CCMP Wireless, hope to someday attempt the CWNE and, you know, wonderful aspirations of a CCIE Wireless someday as well.
Yay.
Well, I guess we wouldn't be here talking about it if we weren't serious about what we did. You know, taking a couple of hours out of your Sunday evening to chat about wireless networking requires a fair amount of commitment. But thank you all for joining in on the show. Today, we've got a show which runs over a bunch of small points. We've been collecting together various topics that we've seen, and we wanted to talk through those issues. And the first issue that we wanted to talk about this week was the importance of a site survey and to perhaps discuss the different types of site surveys that we have, you know, active, passive, predictive, and so forth. Sam, do you want to lead us out on that one?
Well, sure. So, you know, I can't, I find myself, you know, time and again in situations where, you know, I walk into a customer or a client or a situation where, you know, we're fighting X, Y, and Z wireless problem. And, you know, you start, you know, you lead the conversation with, okay, where's your site survey that we did our deployment off of? And if you know, you can usually even tell the answer to that question before you even ask it. It's usually, we didn't do one of those, or, you know, we were getting around to do one of those, or, you know, something along those lines. So, you know, it's such an important topic that, that Cisco has made it, you know, a quarter of their CCMP wireless, test or their certification rather. So, you know, it's definitely one of those things that, find myself time and again expressing out to people that, you know, you need to know where your equipment's going to go before you hang it, just because, you know, you obviously can't see wireless. So you need to have a good understanding of what it's going to do, before you hang it, before you try to use it.
Yeah. So when you do a site survey, what sort of equipment are you looking to use? Are you, I know we, last time we talked about lugging around that damn box in the last show, and so I assume that most engineers walk around with a box full of equipment which actually has an access point and a laptop and different wireless things in. Is that basically what happens? How's that done?
Yeah, effectively. So in my book, you survey what you're going to deploy, and you deploy what you surveyed. So, you should survey what you're going to be hanging. So you don't want to, you know, survey with one AP and then hang a different AP or change your antennas up or things along those lines. You know, the purpose of a site survey is to get an accurate representation of what's happening in the field before you actually hang your gear. And if you're changing pieces up in between, that's obviously not going to happen. But so, yeah, we typically carry, you know, a battery, obviously an AP, you know, whatever types of antennas we expect to be hanging at our facility, and then of course a laptop with a survey card and some survey software that does a measuring of the signal strengths and draws heat blooms on the map for us and all that fun stuff.
Okay, because I mean, I remembered people tend to think that you just turn a wireless on and it mystically does everything that it needs to do. But it's not. The actual radiation physics, you know, the waveform propagation through the space of the building and so forth, isn't like just turn it on and it will work. There's actually things impact on the signal and things that you don't necessarily know about. And that's the value of a site survey. So what's a predictive site survey? What's the difference between a predictive and a passive?
Well, so you know, in many enterprise organizations, it's you know, you have to come up with a you know, some sort of an idea about what you're going to be buying before you commit to a project. So you know, you're not going to go into a million square foot facility and go, okay, we're going to do a wireless deployment. You know, usually you have to start right off with some sort of an estimation about how much it's going to cost and, you know, what the gear is going to be. So you have to have some sort of an idea about where you're starting. So we typically use predictive site surveys where you're actually essentially taking a best guess at where you're going to be hanging APs. And there's many ways to do predictive on paper or in software to come up with some sort of an idea about how many of what you're going to be getting. So that you can come up with some sort of a budgetary ballpark or, you know, some idea of what it's going to look like. Unfortunately, many people just stop there. They go, well, you know, we had somebody tell us where, you know, how many APs it was going to take, and, you know, it's going to take us 500 APs, so you need to go tell us where to hang them. And unfortunately, that's somewhat contrary to a reliable wireless install.
One of the interesting things about radio is that even though radio waves propagate in an open space or in through the atmosphere, in cabled networks we have exactly the same challenges, except that we actually guide the signal down a piece of copper. The only advantage of copper is that it's so overspecified in terms of its spectral performance that even bad cabling works okay in most circumstances. Just very rarely it doesn't actually work. And so a survey, to me, is really about making sure that the radio spectrum is, well, clean at the time that you do the survey, and then helps you identify what types of antennas there are, because there's all different types of antennas that you can use with different properties, and they determine where a base station's going to go, and, you know, whether it should be in the corner or in the center of the room, and how much gain you need to have. Am I right in that understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, every environment's different. You don't know what's inside of the walls at a facility, or where they've, you know, where they've run electrical cabling, or where they've run, you know, water pipes or what. So obviously, since we can't see into the walls very readily, we don't know what that's going to do to our RF in the environment. Or if you're in a warehouse, we don't know what the materials in the shelves are going to do, or we don't know what empty shelves versus full shelves are going to do, really, without staging APs and taking a look at that real world.
So how do you go about selecting antennas, Andrew? You're sitting in you've done a site survey, you've got a wireless base station, and you're saying, well, what antennas do I select? How does the site survey tell you what antennas to select?
Well, it really comes down to understanding the environment and what facility you're trying to cover. It really ties back to business requirements. I mean, you can do all of the technical mumbo jumbo with a site survey, but if you don't know what the business is trying to accomplish, you can't really design for their operational requirements. So you really have to figure out, you know, what types of devices are they going to be using in the environment, where do they need coverage, and what level of coverage do they need? Are they going to be putting voice over the wireless network? Are they just going to be doing bulk data transfers? Or is it going to be more real-time location, a real-time application such as Telnet or SSH traffic, which we see a lot in a lot of back-end systems for warehouse management and things like that. So really, antenna selection is going to be driven by ultimately the business requirements and what signal strengths you need where, and kind of what the facility layout is. So an example would be if you're, you know, covering it inside of a warehouse, do you need just basic coverage for data applications, or do you need to specify a directional coverage to shoot down an aisle maybe that wouldn't otherwise have dedicated coverage based on shelving height or product that's expected to be stored in that shelving? Lots of times we have to dig down into the nitty-gritty and find out, is this shelving going to be holding detergent in a warehouse, or is it going to be holding, you know, like toilet paper or you know, paper-based? Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to hold engine blocks. It's going to absorb.
Yeah, so understanding the layout of the facility and those getting down into that level of detail really is going to help drive the requirements for the wireless network.
So how do you choose an antenna? Like in the antenna spaces, you've got antennas with 6 dB gain, 18 dB, and 26 dB gain in omnidirectional. How do you choose what size of gain antenna? I mean, is it to do with the density of the workstation? So if you used a 26 dBi gained antenna, you wouldn't be able to put so many workstations in a space? Or is it just, you know, is there any arbitrary rules about selecting the antenna gain?
Well, in my book, when you do a survey or even a wireless deployment, your wireless deployment is all about the client. I mean, it's, you know, if you survey and you design for handheld devices versus laptops, or like you said, you know, if you're trying to keep a terminal session established, it's all about the client. And so you try and select antennas based on the type of coverage that you're looking for. For example, if you're trying to shoot down a hallway or something along those lines, we all know that directional antennas, of course, would be preferred. And then it's a matter of how much space you have to cover with what type of client you have to cover, and is that load sufficient for 1 AP or appropriate for 1 AP rather. And it's a lot of design happens at that point.
So basically you're like the rest of us and just making it up.
I wasn't going to say it like that.
Well, that's one of the beautiful things about wireless, right? It's a big black box to most people, so they wouldn't be able to know if we're making it up or if we're actually basing it on hard requirements or not.
Never let knowledge get in the way of a solution is my motto.
I'm working on getting a wireless specific tech field day set up with Stephen Foskett, who runs
the Gestalt. That's cool. That'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be great. Who runs Gestalt ID. And Tech Field Day is an event where a bunch of independent, free-thinking individuals get together with companies that want to present possibly new technology or existing technology and have hard questions asked that they can answer on the spot, and be very honest and forthright about their company's product and product line. And it's a really interesting environment to be in for both sides. For the vendor and for the participants, or the delegates, as they're called. So yeah. I'm working to see if I can reach out to people that I know at companies and get some really good people together, both on the delegate side and on the sponsor side. I've put together a little survey so that we can find out what companies, what wireless companies people know about, or which ones they don't know about, so we can use that to leverage. So, you know, you guys should really be here because, you know, some people don't really know what your products are, what they do, and this could really benefit you. Or you've got a great existing product line. Maybe you should, you know, listen to what people have to say about it. You could think about it that way too.
You were involved with me at the networking tech field day that we had. And we, not only did the vendors get to come and talk to the bloggers, but the bloggers themselves then go out and write articles and put it onto the blogs. And importantly, the bloggers are often people who make a lot of noise or people communicate with or are engaged with, and your product gets a lot of exposure at different levels. For example, some of the vendors from the last field day have had some very positive stories to talk about in terms of engaging with new customers and finding new outlets. The event itself is pretty good fun. It should be as much fun for the vendors as it is for us. I mean, I had a great time. Yeah,
I did too. And so, I'm looking forward to have one specifically about wireless, so I'll know or I'll understand more like 99% of what's going on instead of like 5%. That would be exciting.
That would be very exciting, but there you go. So what we're asking for is from if there's anybody out there who's a vendor who's listening in the wireless industry and would like to get in front of us, get in contact. And for those of you who are listeners, hit up the survey and tell us what your thoughts are. There'll be a link for that in the show notes. Let's move on to the next item. And the next item is we wanted to talk about emerging Wi-Fi in retail enterprises. So, for example, in retail, we're talking about all sorts of odd things. I mean, I know most of the shopping centres I go into and a lot of the tills and everything now are actually using wireless. But, Andrew, I think this is your topic of expertise. Why don't you lead out on that?
To take a step back from actual retail environments and just first discuss, you know, where Wi-Fi is and why it's kind of uniquely positioned to be delivery service for mobile applications and for the consumer interaction in retail is really because the value proposition of Wi-Fi is really very tangible and readily understood by consumers. Because Wi-Fi is really a gateway technology for consumers. They're comfortable with it. They're familiar with it in their house. Most households have Wi-Fi in their homes today just because of ease of use and setup. They don't have to run Ethernet cabling in a household. So consumers are very well tuned to the value proposition of Wi-Fi. And Wi-Fi is also moving beyond just a wired Ethernet replacement. It's really moving into more of a mobile service delivery model or architecture. So it's no longer just a one-for-one replacement with Ethernet services. We're seeing new services spring up around Wi-Fi that are really enabling new service delivery for interaction with the guest in retail brick-and-mortar stores. I really see two use cases from my experience with Wi-Fi in retail. First is really the business tool for employees. This gets into probably beyond just retail, but any organization where employees want to bring in and use personal devices, such as the latest Apple device like the iPads and iPhones, or even some of the Android devices and things of that nature. And the second use case is really more focused around the retail aspect, brick-and-mortar stores with customer interaction in the store and at the point of sale. And you know, we can go through both of those use cases individually.
The thing I'm finding out, for example, when I go down to my local supermarket, we actually get this little hand scanner thing. You can actually, you have to sign up for it, but I get given a little hand scanner and I can walk around and scan all of the things that I want to buy. And then when I get to the checkout, I just hand them the scanner and then they swipe my, then I pay and off I go. I don't have to, you know, swipe every single item as I go through the till. It's very civilized, I must say. And I quite like it.
It's really all around usability and satisfaction of the guest in the store. So if you can, a large metric that a lot of retail organizations use is the queue in the checkout line. So they want to keep those as small as possible because customers don't want to be standing in checkout line. They've done their shopping. They're ready to go. They just want that process to be as fast and seamless as possible. Mm-hmm. So by enabling, you know, customers to keep a track or inventory of their cart as they go through the location and then just simply upload that data in a matter of seconds to a till or a register and have it processed and pay and leave, it really speeds up that checkout time.
Well, I mean, the other thing which has changed my life recently is I got hold of one of these 3G come Wi-Fi modem things where I actually have a little box. It's the size of a credit card, although it's pretty thick. And I turn it on, and it's got a Wi-Fi base station to 3G. And it's completely changed my use of the internet because now I've always been locked into the house. And now I can be moving anywhere, and I've got a little Wi-Fi. I've got this shield of Wi-Fi around me as I move around. and because I've got an iPad and an iPhone and a laptop, it's always been a bit of a pain. I mean, I've always been able to, you know, plug the iPhone into the computer to get internet tethering. And then I could set up the wireless on the computer so that the iPad could use that. And, you know, that was how I got everything connected. Whereas now I've got wireless, a 3G modem. I just turn that on, stuff it in my pocket. iPad, computer can share that and go straight out to the internet wherever I am.
The ever omnipresent Wi-Fi connection now. It's no longer relegated to an access point in your home. It's in your car. It's in your phone. It's everywhere for these hotspots that can just backhaul it over any connection that's available.
So this is what you're saying is about the commoditization. So now wireless has gone from being just a niche technology which was used for various things, like even, you know, the use in the home was kind of fixed. You know, you set it up once and then it just is there, but it only is that space. It doesn't solve the wider issue of internet connection only in that particular space. So your point is that as wireless becomes ubiquitous, it enables not just internet access, it also enables things like tracking people's movements through stores. It allows you to have more analytics because you can gather more data. You can actually see what people are doing, you get more out of the flow and analysis of that type of stuff. Is that your thrust?
Right.
For that?
Exactly. There's a couple of things, especially when we look in retail. You know, the first and most obvious is the hotspot internet type of access. That's the value proposition for the consumer, right? So they have Wi-Fi in their iPads, iPhones, Androids, BlackBerry devices. And increasingly, you know, people are living a mobile connected lifestyle. So they want to be able to access content anywhere. And lots of times we're finding that just the 2G, 3G data services just really aren't available everywhere. So how can retail locations take advantage of potentially already their investment in their internal Wi-Fi network, virtualize it, and spin up a network, guest network for consumers in their stores to provide that value for the consumer of being connected, as well as spin around some corporate and business values as well, such as one of the emerging things that we're seeing is mobile marketing, mobile couponing, upselling and cross-channel sales across e-commerce sites as well as in the brick-and-mortar stores. So the retail industry is looking to, you know, engage those customers in the store where they can really drive more impact and affect the consumer's decision-making process right there while they're standing in front of the product and help influence those sales.
Okay, I think I get the general thrust of the conversation.
The last topic that we had on the list was about virtual APs, the threat that they pose, because there's a number of software-based access points that could turn your laptop into a hotspot, and Andrew wrote a blog post on it that we can reference in the show notes. But I thought this was interesting because I guess I didn't realize that there were so many enterprise deployments of laptop devices where the end user was the local administrator, because you would have to be the local administrator to run any kind of software like this to override whatever your system default settings were. Because I know when I worked at my first tech job, nobody was allowed to be the administrator on their machine. USB devices were blocked from being used, and that was in 2004. The company that I worked for was doing that. So I guess I didn't realize that companies had gotten more lax where more people were administrators, and this could really be a threat to your enterprise because it's kind of like a Linksys box in your laptop, basically, that's wide open and no security. I mean, yeah, Andrew, fill me in. Because, yeah. I mean, I read your blog post, and I was kind of like, wow, I didn't realize that people could do that to their machine because they shouldn't be allowed to. They shouldn't be allowed to install anything outside of the – you know, official company software packages, unless it's been signed off on as being okay.
Don't you say things like that. Computers are not useful. Yeah, you get me mad now.
I know, but you have to understand, if you're going to you're defending the network from things like this, there's always a really big list of things that are approved, and certain power users can be administrators that are smart enough to not break their system or smart enough to not open up a security hole like this into your network. People that use VPN connections over public Wi-Fi spots, those people can be power users.
Yeah, sure, but everybody don't miss the point. Enough. The point is that computers are a productivity tool. And the more restrictions and the more lockdown that you give, the less the benefit of the computer is to an organization. So the more rights you take away, the more flexibility you lose, the less productivity, the less value computers bring to an organization.
Well, I'm also speaking from an organization where people use just Microsoft Outlook products in email and just basic web surfing. So,
well, and it's also beyond just you know, corporate-owned assets. I think that ties back into the commoditization of consumer technology within the enterprise as well. I mean, how many organizations out there are adopting iPads that are personally owned by the employees being brought in and connected to the Wi-Fi network? Lots of times we're seeing growth in client devices that just aren't corporate assets. They aren't controlled by corporate security policy, and there's very limited controls that can be placed on those. So how do we protect the Wi-Fi network, or not even the network? I mean, the network's just a byproduct. It's a transport. How do we protect the data within the corporate intranet from these personal devices being out and about, you know, being traveled with throughout the world, or having lax security policies, you know, no device encryption, you know, anything out there that could potentially, you know, lose corporate data.
You know, I was just talking about the 3G modem, but if everybody came to work with one, we would have a problem.
Exactly. Your Wi-Fi network would be dead. There'd be so many little rogue APs, it wouldn't work anymore.
Yeah, and that day's coming. That's not very far away.
The Apple show, remember when they had Wi-Fi for the audience, but everybody had their own little MiFis and stuff, so nobody's wireless worked?
Yeah.
Yes, you touched on a couple of important things there, Jennifer. It's number one, performance of your corporate network. So if people are bringing in, you know, these personal devices or any type of device that have Wi-Fi capability, how do we protect the performance of the corporate network where, you know, we've done a lot of design and investment around the infrastructure as well as client testing to make sure that that performance is there and meets user expectations. But then if you have an influx of, you know, 1,000 iPads in your corporate office and all of a sudden, you know, they don't behave well, how does that impact, you know, the user experience?
Well, I think that harkens back to, you know, designing a wireless network about the client, right? It's all about what you expect your wireless network to give back to you. So, you know, there are certainly appropriate ways to design wireless networks for that influx of, you know, hundreds of thousands of devices, and all too often, or they've grown, or they, you know, you outgrown a legacy installation, and you know, like everything else in the world, it breaks before it gets the attention of, hey, maybe this is insufficient for the type of work that we're doing. And I think a lot of that, you know, access to corporate data and such really needs to be policy driven as far as, you know, what people are allowed to bring or what people are allowed to put on the network and what they're not, and then restricting those devices accordingly.
Yeah, I think it's just an important point that network administrators just can't expect people to be able to bring in their personal devices and throw up their hands and say, well, we don't support those devices, so if they work, they work. If they don't, they don't. You've got to think of the impact to your corporate assets as well and the overall network performance. So it's just important from a mindset out there that people need to reevaluate their network design for this influx of personal devices.
Absolutely.
Yeah, wireless is a complicated topic. I'd like to thank Sculter Training for sponsoring this week's show. Sculter Training is an award-winning Cisco Learning Solutions partner in the U.S. who offers an array of advanced Cisco courses for multiple technologies. They use authorized Cisco course material and have a strong customer focus to provide top-notch training solutions and have very high customer satisfaction ratings. Sculter provides their training using various delivery methods to easily meet your needs across the states. In addition to their extensive public class schedule, Sculter can develop and deliver client-specific and on-site training for your exact needs. They are partners with Cisco for course development, and with well-known and industry-experienced instructors, they deliver public training courses and private on-site training. Just on a side note there, Brandon Carroll, who is one of the trainers at Sculter, also wrote the Cisco Press textbook for their CWNP course, I believe. So he's one of the instructors over there, and that's where he gets. So he's a good person to know. So Sculter has a great solution for you. You can reach him on 1-800-297-4294 or find him on the web at www.sculter.com. There you can follow them on Twitter as @Sculter, and you should follow that for technical content and special offers from time to time. Mention the Packet Pushers podcast when you book a class, and you'll receive a $250 discount to get you started. That's Sculter Training, and they want you to learn something. That's it for the show this week, and thanks for listening to Packet Pushers Unplugged. We should be back again, well, whenever we get organized. But make sure you come back. I'd like to thank everyone for joining in this week. Jennifer, what are you doing with yourself this week?
Oh, I've got another site survey coming up in Dallas, so I'll be on the road 6 hours a day, round trip. You know, lugging a smaller AP around. It's much smaller than the outdoor AP.
There you go. Andrew, what are you doing this week, and where can we find you?
I'll be working on designing customer Wi-Fi in retail, looking at some real-time location services and doing some design and prep work for evaluation of said solutions. You can find me on Twitter at @RevolutionWiFi, and I also host a blog on revolutionwifi.blogspot.com.
Thanks, Andrew. And Sam, what's happening with you this week, and where can we find you?
Well, this week I'm getting farmed out to a local healthcare organization to wrap up some wireless standards docs and get a couple sites turned up. So pretty boring stuff, to be perfectly honest with you. you can find me on Twitter at @Samuel_Clements, CLEMENTS. And yeah, there you have it.
And I'm Greg Ferrer. You can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com or on Twitter as @etherealmind. We'd love to hear your feedback about today's show, so please send emails to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking. You can check out the podcast website at packetpushers.net, leave comments on today's show, follow us on Twitter as You guessed it, at Packet Pushers. You can find us on Facebook as facebook.com/packetpushers and be our friend. We love friends. And remember, too much networking would never be enough.